Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Dave Cohen in for Newell, who's getting a Friday off. He deserves it. I'm glad to be here with you, and we got a hell of a show for you coming up over the next 3 hours. This hour, we're going to look at the special session of the legislature that starts on Monday. This is an odd special session. It doesn't come at a time that there's some massive crisis barreling down on state government that the legislature must convene. Otherwise, there are going to be horrible, terrible, no good, very bad consequences. No, instead, lawmakers decided to gavel themselves into session because there are issues they want to deal with. We'll find out from Jeremy Alford at Law Politics Weekly just what are those issues and why has the legislature called it itself into session when maybe it didn't have to. Coming up next hour, we'll find out what's it going to look like in Tiger Stadium with a quarter capacity of fans for an LSU game, even for the games that it seems have low interest. I'm not sure we've ever had this few people in the stands at an LSU game, at least not to start the game. So we'll check in with Robert Munson, the Senior Associate Athletic Director, to talk about what it's going to look like and how things will work inside Tiger Stadium tomorrow. We'll also talk to Jeff Palermo to see how the team's going to look on the field and how they match up against the competition, not only this Saturday, but for this entire all-SEC season. And then in the 12 o'clock hour, the voice of the Saints, Zach Strief, stops by to talk to us about if he thinks that the Saints will bounce back against the Packers Sunday night in the Superdome. I'm Dave Cohen in for Newell Norman, and I'm glad to be here to usher in the weekend as we wait on the special session of the legislature. Jeremy Alford joins us now, a publisher and editor of Law Politics Weekly. Hey, Jeremy, happy Friday.
Hey, happy Friday.
And you better savor this weekend, huh?
Yeah, because it all gets kicked off on Monday night.
Yeah, that's right. And it's not going to be a long special session, and they're trying to pack a whole lot in, although not a lot of bills have been pre-filed. Why have lawmakers decided that they have to get together and hold this special session?
Well, you know, there are 70 items on the call or the agenda that lawmakers can take up to debate, but the top issues are going to be executive powers, specifically the governor's restrictions regarding the COVID. There's some hurricane recovery items that need to be addressed. Of course, the unemployment trust fund is facing some challenges. But really, the motivation and the kind of fuel behind this thing has been, you know, lawmakers want to, there are conservative lawmakers, many of them, who want to overturn the governor's executive orders. And so, you know, this session is kind of like your middle school science fair, right? And on Monday, we're all going to walk into the gymnasium and with the three-sided poster boards, and everyone's going to have these proposals to save the world. Some know about science, some don't. But, you know, the difference is nobody wins, and they're judging themselves. This morning, I read in the Lafayette Advertiser, that's the paper of record over in Acadiana, that Senator Fred Mills, they call him T-Fred, back home, he said, and I think he hit the nail on the head, is that, you know, this debate and this session is going to be about science versus emotions, and in some respect, medicine versus business. And, you know, what else crops up is going to be kind of interesting to see, because, you know, in the backdrop, you have, you know, the same complaints about police practices. You have some serious budget issues, and there are 70 items from which lawmakers can pick and file bills for just a a 30-day session.
You know, I find it interesting because this effort to challenge Governor John Bel Edwards' executive authority to order stay-at-home orders, to issue these phased reopenings, to have a mask mandate, to close certain businesses, it has ruffled a lot of feathers, particularly with the far right and the most conservative lawmakers in the state. Yet they could not get enough signatures on a petition during the regular session to do anything about it. But they did get enough lawmakers to say, all right, well, we'll have a special session and talk about it. Why would those same lawmakers refuse to sign the petition to strip the governor of those executive powers, yet be willing to have a special session to debate the matter?
I think there are some lawmakers who didn't sign the petition to override the governor's order because there were too many unanswered questions. Would this affect the flow of federal dollars? Whereas signing a petition to go into a special session, that, you know, I think more lawmakers had permission to do that from their constituencies. Republicans and conservatives are between a rock and a hard place with this, because I think no matter what happens, we're going to end up with a battle that stretches across all three branches of government. You know, if there were enough signatures on a petition, I think the governor could probably get an injunction, and we end up in court having a conversation about whether executive powers are inherent. If they pass legislation to do the same, I think the governor vetoes it. I'm not sure they have enough votes to override him. But they are talking about suspension resolutions, and this is a phrase to keep in mind for this session. Lawmakers can pass a resolution, doesn't require gubernatorial approval, and it's only enacted from the date of enactment through 30 days following the following regular session for about a year. I think that also gets challenged in court. You also have a small handful of lawmakers who think litigation or a lawsuit is the proper course rather than a session or a petition, much like what we saw in Pennsylvania. So I think at some point we end up in the courts on this.
Yeah, it seems inevitable. If anything does pass, if the governor can't veto it, or if they can override the governor's veto, or if they do use another instrument or tool to try and either diminish or take away the governor's authority on the crisis, the COVID pandemic, then it inevitably has to end up in court. So this is a step, perhaps, in that direction. What is your feeling in general when you kind of take the pulse of the legislature? Is there enough support to actually move forward with ordering the governor to either change his executive orders or to actually strip him of authority to issue these executive orders that would then result in Louisiana just being opened back up?
So I do think that there's a group of Republican legislators who are privately not totally sold on this special session and the need for it. And amongst those folks, they've told me that they've expressed those concerns to leadership, and they've communicated to leadership that they want to see progress in the first week. And I think they're positioned to see it. The speaker has scheduled for next Friday, 1 week from today, hearings on bills with the third reading and final passage. These are bills that have already cleared the committee process on the House side and could be voted on as soon as next Friday, 1 week from today. I do think that there's enough support in the legislature to pass some type of legislative instrument that seeks to reverse some of the restrictions that the governor has put in place. But there are a lot of question marks, like we talked about. You know, would the governor veto override? If it's a suspension resolution, does someone eventually ultimately sue over that suspension resolution? And is there an injunction? Do the courts stop it from being enacted? This could be a tremendously messy session. And not only that, but this is a sensitive area of state government. You're talking about the way that the branches communicate with each other. And I think this is a trend we'll see this entire term is the legislative branch reaching for more autonomy and more oversight into the executive branch.
You know, that would be a change, definitely, because historically, the governor of Louisiana has wielded a hell of a lot of power over how the legislature functions and what is even brought up before the legislature. And that is something we're seeing challenged now. And it's an interesting dynamic we have because John Bel Edwards is a Democrat, although he appeals to many of the Republicans in the state. Clearly, he won election and won re-election and had to have Republican support to do that. His public opinion numbers are very strong right now. Most people in Louisiana feel very good about the way he's handled the pandemic. And I think that's more challenging for the Republicans in the legislature as well. But at the same time, we are seeing more legislative independence perhaps than ever before in Louisiana, seeming to mirror a lot of what we're seeing on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. Do you think that the lawmakers have a real shot at changing the dynamic? And are we talking about any constitutional amendments along the way that would change how the legislature functions and give lawmakers more power than they've historically had, taking some of that away from the governor?
That's a great point, Dave, because if you want to affect real change, you need to go after fundamental law, which is a constitutional amendment. Right now, as I understand it, they're looking at a lot of statutes, but we'll see. There's a great book by Wayne Parent called Inside the Carnival, where he looks at the question of gubernatorial powers that you just brought up and whether Louisiana's governor has more power than other states. And he found that Louisiana's governor is actually right slap dab in the middle of the pack. He doesn't have any more or less power than any other governor in America. What has happened is that we've had such strong executives in the state, Edwin Edwards, Huey Long, Earl Long, John McKithen, that has brought some type of, you know, a kind of a tradition to the office more than the law has given it that. But I do think lawmakers are capable of doing it if they can find a way to stick together and override a veto. But we have seen concrete steps already this term that where lawmakers are trying to do it. We saw legislation from Barry Ivey during the earlier sessions this year going after the continuity of government laws. Those laws haven't even had real changes proposed to those laws in a couple of decades. We've also seen John Stefanski, a representative from Crowley, tried to push language earlier this year to give the legislature more oversight into the bond commission process, which again is something that the governor enjoys. But we have seen the governor kind of forced out of the leadership races on both sides over the past term, and that's a big change that has happened already.
Talking with the publisher and editor of Law Politics Weekly, Jeremy Alford, about the special session that begins Monday. Jeremy, when we come back from this break, I want to talk to you about what's actually going to happen on Monday with this special session. Normally, the governor calls the special session and then addresses the legislature based on that call to open the session. Will the governor be even welcome or invited to the floor of the legislature for this special session, where it seems like the entire focus is to try and strip him of his powers? We'll find out from Jeremy what actually happens on Monday when this thing gets started right after this on WWL. The governor of the great state of Louisiana, John Bel Edwards, does not seem concerned about the special session starting Monday in which a group of Republican lawmakers want to strip him of his executive power to issue mandates when it comes to the coronavirus pandemic. We're talking with Jeremy Alford, publisher and editor of Law Politics Weekly. Jeremy, does the governor's stance on this help or hurt the lawmakers as they go into special session in terms of he does not really seem at all concerned about this effort to strip him of his powers? He thinks he has the law on his side, he thinks he has the people on his side, and he thinks he has been doing the right thing, and that helps him as well.
Yeah, I mean, if he wanted to, you could say the worst kept secret in Baton Rouge is that Governor Edwards thinks the idea is completely idiotic. He said earlier this week that a special session with 70 call items is called a regular session. And, I don't think the governor is going to take this lightly. I think he's going to put up a fight. And, there's a definite divide there between the Republicans in the House and Senate and the governor on the fourth floor, traditionally with a special session. You'll see the governor come down to the House floor and address the joint legislature. You're not going to see that this time around. The House and Senate are going to go in on day one and convene around 6 p.m. and read some bills in. Kind of a sign of the times. Earlier in the day, Monday afternoon, the Joint Budget Committee is going to meet on the House floor. Usually they meet in a committee room, but due to social distancing, they're going to utilize the House floor. Some of the Republican members I spoke to told me that the highlight for day one for them is going to be removing the plexiglass dividers that have been put around the desks on the House floor that they feel like hampers their ability to communicate to other folks who are sitting on the floor. So we'll see a little bit of that. I'm sure there'll be some pictures of lawmakers removing those sheets of
plexiglass. So they're actually going to go in on day one and tear down the plexiglass. It sounds like maybe the issue is not the ability to communicate, but maybe it's more symbolic that they want to make a point that we are not going to bow to these restrictions and let the governor divide us with plexiglass. We're taking this down because we don't believe it should be there.
You know, you make it sound more dramatic than it is. There's no ceremonial taking down of the plexiglass. They took it down during the sessions earlier this year. But I think a few are just, you know, they got some tension and some angst built up, and removing that plexiglass might help that a little bit.
We're talking with Jeremy Alford. So I don't recall a session of the legislature in the past where the governor didn't address all of the lawmakers at the beginning. Has it happened before?
I can think of one earlier this year. We got to remember this is the second special session that lawmakers have called themselves into this year. And as far as I know, this may be the only time in Louisiana history where the legislature has called themselves in twice this close together.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel like there's – I mean, now, obviously, to those who feel that they have to strip the governor of his executive power, that is the crisis that has to be addressed immediately, because a growing number of their constituents probably are telling them that their businesses are going to have to close permanently if they don't get back in business soon and lift these restrictions that we see in these phased-in reopenings.
And I think it's important to note that I don't know of any legislators who are trying to strip the governor of his executive powers. I think they're or many conservative Republicans who want to limit the governor's ability to issue emergency orders. And they want to Representative Beryl Amede, for example, from Terrebonne Parish, is going to be filing a bill that would restrict or limit the governor's ability to restrict or limit nursing home visitations. So these are very tailored proposals by some of the legislators. I don't know anyone who really just wants to go in and strip the governor of his executive powers altogether.
But isn't the goal to get us out of phase three and to allow businesses to function with full capacity and not have bars closed? Don't some of these lawmakers really feel, and I know that some of their constituents are really struggling right now. I mean, every time we see a survey from the Louisiana Restaurant Association, a higher percentage of restaurants say that they may not make it till the end of the year if these restrictions aren't lifted. And we are hearing from bar owners more and more that they may never be able to recover from this because of the length for which they have now been shut down. But don't some of the lawmakers have been saying since this all began, and the effort to get the signatures on the petition was to reopen everything and to lift the ordered closures by the governor.
Yeah, and look, you know, I can give you specific examples. You know, Representative Stephen DeWitt over in Lake Charles said that he wants to move forward with one of these vehicles because he thinks kids should be back in high school athletics. You have Representative Jack McFarland from North Louisiana who thinks that the governor's executive power should be changed because there's a huge rental program that the legislature set aside for, and it hasn't been distributed at a rate that pleases lawmakers. There are folks who want to go to nursing homes, like Representative Beryl Amede. So there are a variety of reasons, and we kind of know what these are. Anyone with a social media account knows what the complaints are against the governor's orders.
Talking with Jeremy Alford of Law Politics Weekly. Jeremy, if people want to read more and get to know you a little better and your analysis, how do they do that?
Yeah, follow me on Twitter. It's at LA Politics Now. And you can also visit lapoliticsweekly.com, lapoliticsweekly.com.
All right, so Monday, the special session begins. 70 items on the call, but I was looking on your website. Only, what, 4 bills have actually been filed thus far?
As of 5 p.m. yesterday, there had only been 4 bills filed that were available for review on the website. But just keep an eye on the legislature's website. There's probably been bills added already this morning, and they're going to continue to drop through the weekend.
What does the governor do during this session? Does he change his behavior in any way? He's not addressing the lawmakers on Monday. Do you expect him to have more news conferences or to be more in the public eye or to kind of take a back seat to the legislature during the session?
No, I think the governor would bristle at the suggestion that he would take the back seat to anyone. He's not one to bend to political pressure in terms of making decisions on these press conferences and his executive orders. Right now, all he can do is wait and see what the legislature is going to do, work with his allies in the legislature to get his side of the story out, and get his veto pen ready.
You know, he's really seemed through all of this unaffected by the political pressures that have come on social media and elsewhere, some of the angst and anger that we've been seeing here and across the country. Here's a man who is not running for re-election because he is term limited out, cannot run for re-election as governor. Does he, do you think, have a political future beyond being governor? And is he concerned about that next step and what his behavior now might do to his ability to move forward in politics? Or is this kind of it for John Bel Edwards?
No, I think that Governor Edwards was in a unique position to watch Bobby Jindal make some mistakes during his final term when he was constantly running for president instead of being governor. And he has taken great care to make sure that his focus has remained on his state office and not his future ambition. But, if you want to look ahead and speculate, I think U.S. Senator John Kennedy's reelection might be a place that we see John Bel Edwards land. He's not too long in the tooth that he doesn't have any runs left in him. I think you could see him as part of a Democratic administration, maybe on the military side as a civilian. But I think the last chapter of John Bel Edwards' political story has not been written.
And who runs for governor next? We haven't heard a lot of rumblings yet. I don't know if any of these individuals who are challenging the governor's authority in the legislature might have their eyes on the governor's mansion, but you will not have an incumbent running for reelection next. Any rumblings yet early as to who may be seeking the governor's mansion?
Yeah, I think one voice you'll hear during this special session that may be on the ballot for governor is Attorney General Jeff Landry. I think also Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser is looking at that race. State Senator Sharon Hewitt, amongst legislators at least, has been fundraising very aggressively, suggesting that there could be a statewide run in her future. Representative Stuart Bishop, the chairman of Ways and Means, told me earlier this year that he was open to the idea of running for governor. I think it's going to be a pretty large field when Governor Edwards steps aside, and it's going to be very competitive.
We still have a couple of years for that picture to develop, but just curious, thinking about it, because I think now a lot of people, you talked about how Edwards is being careful not to show his hand or to show that he's worried about anything else down the road in the future, but I think politicians always have to worry about how they're behaving now and how that affects their future ability to hold another office. But we got time before we worry about that because he's still got a couple more years there in the governor's mansion. Jeremy Alford, anything else we should be addressing as we get ready for Monday's special session?
Yes. We probably talked about less than 10 of the items that are on the 70-item call, but we'll have to, I guess, save it for another show.
Yeah, well, we got a little time if you want. I mean, obviously, hurricane recovery is a big deal.
The hurricane recovery is a big deal in terms of what's going to grab headlines. There's going to be a bill from Representative Lance Harris that addresses this issue of defunding the police. And it's meant to discourage universities and municipalities from doing that by putting into jeopardy their own state funding. It's probably worth noting that Lance Harris is also running for Congress on the fall ballot. And this will generate him a great deal of earned media. But if we learned anything earlier this year is that issues related to police practices get very emotional in the legislature, and I imagine this issue will as well.
Normally the legislature starts kind of slow, and it takes them a while to get stuff out there, but they're only going to be in this special session for 30 days. They don't have a whole lot of time to dilly-dally, huh?
Yeah, and, don't blink on Monday or Tuesday. I think things are going to move very quickly. Like we talked about earlier in the hour, Speaker Shake Snyder has already scheduled bills for third reading and final passage on Friday, 1 week from today. These are bills that have already cleared the committee process. There's already committee meetings scheduled. The most interesting thing is that there are committee meetings scheduled on the House side next week every single day, but they're only a small handful of bills. So
where are they scheduled to hear if the bills haven't been filed? I guess they're really getting planning on a flood of bills being filed in the next couple of days.
Yeah, and those are all being drafted. And you got to remember, this special session really kind of snuck up on a lot of folks very quietly over the weekend. This past weekend, Clay Shakesnyder and the Senate President Paige Cortez met with groups of legislators regionally to explain the idea and to get signatures on a petition. And, you know, by Monday, they had a special session. You know, just last week, there were meetings of House members about which petition to override the governor to go with, because there's a couple of different ones. And you know, at one of the meetings, the speaker told them to, you know, just have some patience. We'll have some news early next week. And it ends up he was right. And that news was a special session.
We're witnessing a change in the way some lawmakers want Louisiana's legislature to function and how much power it has. We'll see Monday how successful they are and for the next 30 days to follow. Jeremy Alford, we appreciate you joining us. LawPolitics.com, at LawPolitics now on Twitter. Have a great weekend. I'm sure we'll be talking to you throughout the special session.
Looking forward to it. Take care.
Jeremy Alford here on WWL. I want to hear from you, 504-260-1870. You can call us or text us on the Mortgage Financial Talk and Text line. Do you think that lawmakers are doing the right thing in calling themselves into special session to challenge the governor's power to issue executive orders during the pandemic? Do you think that they should try to strip him of some of his powers and try to issue their own orders in terms of what should be opened and what should be closed, into what mitigation efforts should be mandated in the state of Louisiana? Or do you think it's much ado about nothing and just playing politics, jockeying for political position? 504-260-1870. Text me and call me right now. Got a line open for you at 260-1870. We'll let you sound off after this. 1045, Dave Cohen in for Newell Norman. And thanks for calling. You're on WWL. What do you make about this special session starting Monday with some lawmakers trying to challenge the governor's authority to issue these executive orders during the pandemic?
It's, of course, it's all politics, and it's not just this time that this has happened. The Attorney General, Jeff Landry, has gone after Governor Edwards before, and he is going to run for governor, I'm sure. But I just think it's awful to do what they're trying to do to the governor. I normally vote Republican, but I cross party lines, and I'm so glad I did, because he has been so calm throughout this pandemic. I can't even imagine how it would have been with Rasponi. And he has proven that he has worked across the aisle. And I just can't talk good enough about Governor Edwards. And I think it's a shame that they try and fight him on everything.
You know, I've heard a lot of Republicans say, I just wish he were a Republican, because they like him and they feel he's done a good job in many cases. And they think that most of his platform is a very conservative Republican platform, but he's still got that D next to his name. And so I think that that inherently is where the problem is in the modern age of politics, where however someone identifies, not what they are philosophically, not how they work in government, but just how they designate themselves is what matters more than anything, it feels like.
And as far as going in and tearing down the petitions, I think that is so immature. And by the way, the governor has been working with Dr. Birx. So I don't understand what the problem is. I mean, the whole time he's been working with the White House and going with what they are saying, but they don't agree with that either, just because he's a Democrat.
Well, but you know, the president doesn't necessarily agree with his own coronavirus task force either.
Exactly.
And when you have the president of the United States having appointed this task force, but then not necessarily agreeing with what they say and the information that they release and the advice that they put out, you do start to wonder, who should we believe here? Who should we follow? Who is actually calling the shots? And I think that that's where a lot of this back and forth and a lot of this angst comes from.
And as far as after Governor Edwards' term here, I think he has a very bright future. I think so highly of the man. I really do.
He would break a mold if he could actually run for and win political office after being governor. That's not been happening with governors in Louisiana. It has not been normal to see them move on and have political success after being governor. So if he did, he would definitely be breaking a mold. And thanks for the call. Have a great weekend. Danny, thanks for calling. You're on WWL.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. What we got to do is get our legislators to compromise, whether you got an R or a D or an I. And here's how I would do that. If you don't get things settled in a regular session, you can't run for reelection. Well, guess what? We're going to find a way to come together, right? That's the way it ought to be. What do you think?
Well, I don't know that you could make that a blanket rule, because obviously special sessions serve an important purpose, and particularly in the last decade, we've seen them used more and more here in Louisiana for many reasons. Are you proposing that you have a regular session? If you don't get it done, oh, well, there's just no other option?
Exactly. We'll bring get them out of there and bring in 100 new people with new ideas that's going to sit there and compromise with people and not forget the poor, not forget the children that need help. Guess what? They're going to compromise. It ought to be a law.
Danny, it's an interesting idea that if you don't get it done in the regular session, you're term limited out, you can't be back, and you can't have a special session. 504-260-1870. John, thanks for calling. You're on WWL.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
Oh, yeah, I don't have much respect for Mr. Edwards, John Bell.
Why not?
Well, here's the number I want to know. How many people have underlying conditions, caught COVID, and lived?
Well, we don't know that number specifically.
Because the CDC and John Bell Edwards won't push for this number.
Well, we know how many people have survived coronavirus in Louisiana. They do put out that number once a week now, the presumed recoveries. And obviously the vast majority of people who have had coronavirus in Louisiana have recovered, according to the statistics released by the Louisiana Department of Health. We know more than 5,000 people have not, though, and they have died from coronavirus. Right. And the vast majority of those people were elderly. The vast majority of those people had an underlying condition, whether it was high blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease, or one of the other comorbidities that we have heard about. There's no doubt this unbalancedly affects old people and sick people.
So what is the number? And what the problem is, the CDC, and I'm not going to call Edwards part of it, but you know what? If I was the governor, I'd go after the CDC and get some more numbers. And, you know, you're supposed to be a powerful person. You're supposed to be really looking into the nooks and crannies that I can't look into, that I would like to look into.
Well, what makes you believe he's not doing that, though? He meets with the Coronavirus Task Force every week and gets their input.
The same thing over and over. The other thing is, how many people died in August last year without the coronavirus? And how many people died in August this year with the corona? What's the difference in the deaths of the 2 months? And
I don't have those numbers right in front of me, but I can tell you it's dramatically higher. There's no doubt about that. To answer your first question, according to the Louisiana Department of Health, 149,640 people in Louisiana are presumed recovered from the coronavirus. 163,222 have had coronavirus. So you're looking at 14,000 there that are not presumed recovered yet. 5,241 of those people died. So then you look at how many currently have it and have not yet died, and you're somewhere around 9,000. But 163,000 people in Louisiana tested positive for it and did not die. So far, 5,241 did die. And across the country, more than 200,000 have died. But overwhelmingly, these are people with hypertension. 53% in Louisiana of people who died from coronavirus had high blood pressure. 31% had diabetes. And more than half of them were over the age of 77. So yeah, this disproportionately affects old people and sick people. So does that mean that we shouldn't care about old people and sick people and we shouldn't have mitigation efforts? Because we'll accept their deaths and it's okay if they die? 504-260-1870. Governor John Bel Edwards and Mayor LaToya Cantrell need to stop ruling with an iron fist. Open the economy! Exclamation points, as one text at 504-260-1870, the Mortgage Financial Talk and Text Line. Another says the Republicans trying to strip the governor of his power is just a power play because the Republicans don't think a Democrat should tell them what to do. Fine job by the governor not to cave in. Another says, I'm a diehard Republican. And I love and voted for John Bel Edwards. Another says, I wish John Bel Edwards were not term limited out of office. Another says, the Republicans are doing what they have to. Edwards needs to stop taking away our rights to run our businesses. 504-260-1870. Drew, thanks for calling. You're on WWL.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on the lady who called.
Ann?
Yes, whatever. Yeah, you know, I don't know. I didn't get her name. She just called. She's a Republican. And she was talking about the governor being a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, anyway, I just wanted to say that I thought the things that she had to say were so refreshing, given today's toxic environment, political environment. I thought what she had to say was so refreshing. I'm a Democrat. And it was so good to hear her say that. Say those words. Seemed like she couldn't talk highly enough about him. So it was just refreshing to me. And I just think she's the sweetest.
Well, I appreciate your call, Drew, and telling Ann that you think she's the sweetest. Coming up, we're going to take a look at LSU, the reigning national championship football team, taking the field tomorrow in Tiger Stadium, a 2:30 kickoff in Death Valley against the new-look Mississippi State Bulldogs. How is the new-look Tiger team going to perform in this first game of this bizarre COVID-influenced season? And only 25,000 fans in the stands at LSU. We're going to find out what that's going to look like, how fans will be socially distanced, what the rules will be for them getting in and out of the stadium, and what's going to happen during the game as we talk to LSU's Senior Associate Athletics Director. I'm Dave Cohen, in for Newell Norman. Enjoyed talking about the special session with you this hour. Let's talk Tigers next hour.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.